Welcome to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Elliot Berlin. My guest this episode is a mother of three, and each of her birth experiences could really be a standalone episode. She could literally write the guide to modes of delivery after personally experiencing vaginal birth, cesarean birth, and vaginal breech birth after cesarean. She graciously accepted my invitation to share her experiences on the Informed Pregnancy Podcast in hopes that she may help other women become aware that there are options when faced with out-of-the-box pregnancy and delivery choices. Lillian Cohen-Zod, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
I'm excited that you're here. You're a very warm, interesting, unique person.
Thank you. Well, you make it easy.
Oh, thanks. And you've had really interesting birth experiences. So let's go back to the first one when you were preggo the first time. Did you have thoughts about birth early on?
I had the thought to avoid all thoughts about birth, so I just didn't think about it too much. I was scared of the actual birth process, so I avoided thinking about it. I avoided taking classes on it, which is not, I don't advise this, but...
What was your approach?
That was my approach.
Were you deliberately wanting to have babies at that time?
Yes. We had gotten married. I basically had one period, and then we got pregnant.
Oh, so you did not waste a lot of time.
We did not waste any time.
Okay. But you were not opposed to getting pregnant. You just were opposed to figuring out how to get it out of you.
Yeah, I was a little scared of that part. But I figured, you know, I would look around in, like, crowded places and see all these people, and I'd think, okay, they came from somewhere. It'll be fine.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, and I figured I could do anything for one day. So that was my basic approach to
I wish I had that approach to things.
Labor.
That's already confidence.
Well, I guess. It kind of went that way. I mean, I really didn't have any control over it once it actually happened.
Did you never get to the point where you were doing research on?
No.
No. So you just thought, you had a doctor at a hospital.
I had a doctor at a hospital.
And you just thought, when the time comes,
I'm going to go there.
They'll just tell me what to do.
Do what the doctor says.
Okay.
And I took kind of the opposite approach of, like, you know, the natural way. I was like, my first thing was like, just get me an epidural and I'll take it from there.
Sure. Why not?
So that was my entire birth plan.
I think that's for most people the approach. Like the local hospital here, when they do the birth tour, they are very pleased and proud to say that 93% of women who give birth there have an epidural.
Oh, wow.
So okay. I think you're in the overwhelming mainstream.
Yeah. It didn't go quite as planned, but
yeah. So when did things start to take a turn?
At 30 weeks pregnant, I started experiencing what I know now to be contractions. So went into the hospital, and they were able to stop those contractions, but they were contractions. At that point, they put me on kind of a modified bed rest. And at 33 weeks, my water broke in the middle of the night. It was like, I think 3:30 or 4 in the morning. And that was it.
That's a lot. 33 weeks is pretty early. And
yeah,
also,
really
at the 30 weeks when you felt contractions, did they, like, check your cervix to see what was going on?
They did. And my cervix, if I remember correctly, it was slightly dilated. I don't remember the exact amount. But I was in the hospital for a few days. They gave me the steroids for the baby's lung development, and they gave me few different medications to kind of stop the...
Slow everything down.
Yeah. Indocin, I think it was called, to slow everything down, which they were able to do. And they released me after about 3 nights in the hospital.
And then 3 more weeks go by, and then
Three more weeks go by, and boom.
Was there any question in your mind that that was your water? Did you think maybe I just...
Drank too much? Yeah, we had gone... Actually, because I was on this modified bed rest, so I'd been at home. I went out to dinner with our family, said goodbye to everyone around 10 o'clock, went home, went to bed, and woke up, thought I just kind of had maybe gone to the bathroom or,
pee.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't like this gush. It was just like a pee.
A little moisture.
Yeah.
And then how did you find out otherwise?
So I went to the bathroom and I couldn't stop it. You know how like a urine flow you can stop?
Yeah.
This I couldn't
no
stop.
No control over it. It kept going.
So I told my husband, I said, can you Google peeing without able to stop?
Uncontrollable
peeing.
Yeah.
And he's like, I think it's your water. So
was that scary to you at 33 weeks?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm a little scared for you.
It's scarier looking back because it was my first baby. I really didn't know what to expect.
Because you didn't do any homework. Because you didn't want to.
I didn't do any homework. I didn't know what to expect. You know, I didn't know what it was to even have a baby or didn't know what it was to have a premature baby, a baby in the NICU. I didn't know what any of these things meant at the time. So was I scared? Yeah, but if I had known those things, I would have been much more scared.
Much more nervous.
Yeah.
So when you figured out it's probably your water, you go straight to the hospital?
Yes. I started kind of running around like, oh, I'm going to go get my bag together, blah, blah, blah. And then my first contraction hit, and it was really strong, and there was blood. So I got scared. We got in the car. My husband got us to the hospital in about 6 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And she was born very quickly after that.
Very quickly after you got to the hospital?
Yes.
I mean, I know it's probably a little blurry chaos in retrospect, but from the time you got there, did they take you to triage? Were they panicky because you were early? Was the blood a concern?
They were not so panicky. They knew that she was coming. Like, they said, this isn't like last time when you had the contractions and we were able to stop them. She's on her way. She's coming today now. Mm-hmm. I was in a lot of pain. I think in
contraction pain. Okay.
In one of my first meetings with you, when I was trying to flip my third baby, you said those fast labors are kind of like a train going through you. And that's the perfect way to explain it. It felt like a massive train was going through my body because it was just contraction on top of contraction. I was throwing up the entire time.
Oh, wow.
And it was really intense. And then I finally got the epidural that I always wanted.
That's the one
the
thing
you
knew.
Epidural of my dreams.
Yeah. But you must have been far along, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you were already 10 centimeters.
Yeah, I was like pretty much ready to.
Did you know you were 10 centimeters when you got the epidural?
I knew I was close, but again, it was my first birth. I didn't know like if I was going to have to push for
hours
or minutes or, you know. So I got the epidural. I was really scared because, of course, they're like, don't move a muscle or you will never walk again. I'm throwing up. How? But
that's hard to picture.
Yeah. But it was fine. I got the epidural. They kicked my husband out at that point, and I almost made out with this, like, little Indian woman because I was so happy to, like, have this pain go away. Oh. She was my savior at that point. But he came back in, and I said, I have to go to the bathroom. And the nurse said, no, honey, that's your baby.
Oh, you felt like you have to poo?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the baby came out. How big was your baby?
She was 3 pounds, 12 ounces.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's also hard to imagine.
Yeah.
So not a lot of pushing then?
No, I pushed maybe 3 times. Like, you know how you push 3 times in one?
Oh, with it in one cycle of
pushing? Yeah. So I did that 3 times and out she came.
Wow. So not so much. Did they take her away right away?
They took her away. I did get to hold her for a brief moment and then they took her straight to NICU. And still at that point, I was like kind of on this high, like, oh, we just had a baby and it's fine, you know? I had no idea everything that was to come still with that.
Yeah, so what did come?
Well, they took her to the NICU and thank God she was fine. She was what they call like a grower and a feeder. Mm-hmm. So she really just needed to stay there to grow, to feed, but she was, you know, the breastfeeding class I took, like, was out the window because she was on a feeding tube. She stayed in NICU for 29 days.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Yeah.
So were you pumping milk for her?
I was, yeah.
And they would feed her your milk together with formula?
They would feed her my milk initially. And then when I wasn't, like, making enough to keep up with her demand, I guess, they asked if we could go to formula. And at that time, it was my first baby. The only class I'd taken was a breastfeeding class where they said that like 99.9% of women can breastfeed. So I was like, I can do this. I'm going to do this.
You couldn't do both?
Yes, but I was terrified of formula at first because, you know, I don't know. I was in that camp.
Word on the street?
Yeah, like 3 kids in, I'm like, he's on formula and it's fine.
He's great, yeah. But everything's different with the first.
That's yes,
like. Now definitely. I'm just like, here's the outlet if you want to stick your finger in
exactly.
there.
Exactly.
You'll, like,
yeah,
you'll learn
there's
the hard
the
way.
There's the street, you'll see the cars.
Yeah, that's right.
If you can't stop, that's your problem. Yeah,
enjoy the mud.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk about your second out of three interesting journeys. I understand the mental demands of motherhood. I see it every day in my practice. That's why I'm excited about Needed's new cognitive support. Unlike other supplements, It's specifically formulated with postpartum and breastfeeding moms in mind, using safe and effective ingredients. This means that moms can get the brain boost they deserve without compromising safety. Plus, it includes clinically studied ingredients, proven to support focus and memory. Hurry and get your cognitive support from Needed before you forget. Visit thisisneeded.com and use your code Berlin to get 20% off your initial order. This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike, Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash. Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy Podcast, and we're going to jump right into baby number two with Lillian Cohen-Saud. So after 29 days, baby came home and everything was cool?
Yeah, everything was great, and she's been growing like a weed ever since, so.
Growing like a weed, awesome.
Yeah, it's been great.
Such a Southern California baby.
She's four now, so.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so the other ones came fast. So
they did.
How old was she when you found out you're having another?
I don't remember how old she was when I found out, but she was 2 years and 4 months when my other
one
was born.
When your son was born?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I actually had two miscarriages between them.
Oh,
so.
My. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. It happens. And
how far along were you for the miscarriages?
They were early. They were early, like 7, 8 weeks, something like that. Yeah.
Still not the easiest thing.
Not the easiest, but I've realized that pregnancy and becoming a mom, breastfeeding, like all of it is not the easiest
not
thing.
Easy.
Everybody has a story.
No, I say it all the time. You guys are like crazy superheroes.
I get to sometimes
just be involved and watch in a way. I think that dudes don't usually really get involved and watch, and I'm just in awe every day.
Totally.
It's incredible. So with those miscarriages, were you actively like, let's have another one now? Or just
We were so in love with our baby, and I was like, let's have another one pretty early on. So she was 8 months when I got pregnant with the first miscarriage, and I think slightly over a year when I got pregnant with the second miscarriage.
Did those make you nervous? Like,
they
especially
did.
Two?
Yes. And thankfully, my husband was like, let's go see somebody about this. So we went and sought out a fertility expert. And he ran all these tests and eventually found out that everything was fine, but I did have a bicornate uterus.
Oh.
So
it's kind of like cornate, it's horns. So like the top of your uterus was split into sort of two.
Yeah, he explained it kind of like your uterus, instead of being the normal shape, is like a heart shape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. The cartoon heart.
Yes.
So that there's two lobes at the top, and sometimes that little middle part, when the embryo sticks onto there looking for lunch until there's a placenta to feed it, there's not really that much blood flow in that area, and so they sometimes, I guess, detach and don't thrive.
Exactly.
So did they do something? Did they get rid of the septum?
They did, yeah. He went in. It was like a pretty quick outpatient procedure where he did something.
You were sleeping.
Yeah, I was out of it.
Counting sheep.
Yeah, exactly.
But just another example of like things women do.
Right.
Just to have babies.
Yeah, know? Just another day in the life
of a woman.
But it was good that we found that out. And then the next time we got pregnant, very shortly after that, I think I went for my 2-week checkup after that. And we were actually going to do the IVF because we thought, well, okay, this isn't working naturally. But after that, we tried naturally, and it did work. So
boom.
Yeah. thank God.
You know, getting pregnant doesn't seem to really be your thing.
No.
Like a challenge for you.
Right.
It's just
right.
Those middle two are hard to keep in there.
Yeah.
So I also imagine, even though you had the procedure, that was a little nerve-wracking for the first trimester or so.
Definitely. I think there's kind of a hesitation to bond with a baby in any way or like really think about it too much until you're past
just a
certain point.
Protection mechanism. Don't get too attached. Don't get too close.
Yeah.
Just in case.
You know, I don't remember exactly now, and I think it's probably just like my littlest is 6 weeks and I'm in a haze. But I remember being really sad about the first miscarriage and thinking like, oh, I suck as a mom and I suck as everything, because I wasn't being like an amazing mom at that moment because I was just really, really sad.
Oh, to your oldest.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's just something that unfortunately women go through, and it's not talked about enough, which is why I'm bringing it up. I didn't have to bring that up, but I think it's important that we kind of normalize it, because it is so normal to have a miscarriage, and yet it's like all these emotions that you have to carry with you through your day, whether it's back to work or caring for your child. So anyway, I think it's important.
I'm glad you shared it. I agree that it's under talked about, and so many people experience it and feel alone.
Definitely.
But also makes me really sad. Like, this happens once in a while on the podcast where tears welling up in my eyes because you're such a cheerful person in general. And then to picture you being so sad that you feel like a bad mom.
Yeah.
Is just really sad to think about.
It is. But I think it's a universal feeling for moms. I think when we go through things, that's like the first thing you think is like, I need to be there for my child. You know, I need to get this together so that they can be okay. And I can see now, like looking back on this, you know, however many years later, that it's okay to take that time to be sad. And like, you don't have to be superwoman mom 24/7, because it's important to.
That's very powerful. I think you still are superwoman.
Thank you.
Even at that time. And sometimes, especially at that time,
just
having the power to give yourself some self-care and some
self-time.
Space.
Yeah.
Strength that brings you
definitely
to do that for yourself and for everyone who depends on you.
Yeah.
Second pregnancy, though you did make it this
one. We made it. Yeah, a little embryo that could.
A little embryo that could. So at some point you start thinking about your previous birth experience, and does it change how you act in this pregnancy, how you plan for birth the second time around?
I would like to say that it changed how I planned for birth, but I was still terrified of birth. And my birth experience the first time, I didn't say this, but my entire labor and birth was probably like 2 hours.
Wow.
So I didn't plan a whole lot for labor, but I changed how I was in the pregnancy. Like the first time around, I was still working like a mad person and like really not taking great care of my body. The second pregnancy, I really slowed down. And I think just being a mom also helped me to realize that it's important to slow down, and you have to slow down when you have a toddler because they take like 700 years to put on a sock. So you know, in some ways, life was more harried at that point, but in some ways, I learned to kind of slow down. My first pregnancy, we went to Italy. I was like trains, planes, and automobiles, and I didn't like leave the city of home, you know, the second pregnancy.
I was just impressed that you even found the sock.
I know, right?
So you were slow, but you took a slower approach.
I took a slower approach, and then at 20 weeks, I went into my 20-week ultrasound, and the doctor who at this point I went to a high-risk doctor, not just like a typical OB. I had my OB, but I also had a maternal fetal medicine doctor on my case, thank God, because he found at the 20-week ultrasound that, again, my cervix was wanting to dilate. And he sent me pretty quickly in to get a cerclage, which is, I'm sure you can explain it better than me, but it's a stitch so that your cervix physically cannot dilate.
Holding it closed. Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah.
What was it like to have it done? Because it sounds awful, but maybe it's not.
It's not that bad. You go into the hospital. It's an outpatient procedure. They do give you a spinal or an epidural. And they go into the operating room.
Just FYI, we have a whole episode on
Cerclage?
The difference, no, between epidurals and spinals and...
Okay,
and
so I have to listen to that because I still have three kids in and several of these and I have no idea what I've got.
Dr. Mark Zukowski, he's the head of anesthesia at a local hospital for labor and delivery, and he talks about all those different options. I also was kind of confused, and then at the end, I really learned a lot. So getting back to you, somehow they numbed you basically from
somehow
your back down.
Yep.
And so you didn't feel what was going on?
Nope, didn't feel it. And then... once they
but
were
just
done,
another
it took
crazy thing mothers
just
do.
Another crazy thing moms do. Yeah, it was probably about, I don't know, I'd say like 20 minutes in the operating room from start to finish. And then you go back and just have to make sure that you can pee and that everything's working properly and you can walk. And then you get to go home.
Another day on the job.
Just another day on the job, yeah. The hope was that that would help to keep the baby in farther than the 33 weeks and certainly farther than the 20 weeks that I was at that moment.
Okay. So when you have an MFM, they usually keep monitoring you a little more intensely than a typical pregnancy?
Yes. Yes.
And so, how did your monitoring go in the coming weeks?
It was fine. Everything was looking good. I would go in, you know, I think at the beginning it was like every couple weeks. I think the whole pregnancy was every couple weeks. And everything looked good. And this time, she was breech.
Okay. One question that pops in my head. Do you feel your cerclage after the anesthesia wears off?
No, I didn't.
There's no awareness of
no.
it? Okay.
Oh, but something terrible that happens with cerclage is that you're not allowed to have any sex.
Oh.
And it's tough. I mean, from like, you know, 20 weeks to 6 weeks after birth.
Would you be nervous anyway?
Yeah, but I would.
So,
I would have been.
Yeah, but now you can't.
You can't because there's risk of infection. You can't. They put you on what's called pelvic rest, so no exercise, no sex, no baths, you know, anything that could cause infection.
So a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but it's worth it.
That's what moms do.
Yeah.
I see a theme coming up.
I know, right?
Yeah. It must be harder on the relationship then, too.
Yeah, I mean, thankfully my husband is so, you know, we're a team.
He's pretty cool.
We're in it to win it. So, yeah, we're in it for the long haul, and he's really cool. He actually gave me my progesterone shots, which was another part of my beautiful pregnancy.
Again, in an effort to just help sustain the pregnancy?
Yes. So,
how long did you have to do those for?
From 16 weeks to 36 weeks,
oh,
I believe.
Wow.
Yeah, once a week.
They're, like, thick, the oil? Like,
it's
that goes
pretty
in your
thick,
bum?
Yeah. Yep, it goes in right in your bum.
Oh, wow.
And it's a lot of fun.
Fun times, fun in the bum.
Yeah, it's once a week. The hope again there is that it helps to keep the baby nice and tight inside.
But then you found out the baby was breech around?
Pretty early on, and she never moved.
Did you do things to try to encourage her to move?
In this baby, I didn't. I was so terrified of her coming early, so I just was like, whatever God, the universe wants, like, that's what I'm going to do. And I didn't try anything to flip her.
Did they offer anything?
They didn't.
Okay.
No, they didn't offer any sort of, like, what is that?
ECV.
Yeah, ECV. Yeah. I just, they offered a C-section, and I said, okay, that was pretty much it.
At what week were they planning to do?
They don't schedule C-section at this particular hospital till 39 weeks. So, obviously, if I could have made it to 39 weeks, it would have been amazing, but...
But
dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. At, I believe I was 35 and 6 days.
Okay, that's further along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, further along. I started feeling funny, like we were getting ready for a party, and I told my husband, I feel weird. And he's like, what do you mean weird? And I said, I don't know, I just feel weird, kind of like last time. The first time when I had gone in at 30 weeks.
Oh.
So he said, well, let's pack a bag. We were on our way to this party. He said, let's pack a bag. The party's on the way to the hospital. So we'll stop by. And if you're still feeling weird, we'll just hop in the car and go to the hospital. And that's what happened. We went to the party. They were serving really good food, which I really was like looking forward to. So it's like, let's go. Let's eat. And then if we have to, we'll go to the hospital. And that's exactly what happened.
So smart.
I know, right?
And then what happened when you got to the hospital?
They said, yep. It's time to get this
baby out. Your cervix was changing already? I mean,
yeah, my cervix.
Even with the stitch.
Even with the stitch. And the concern was that if you dilate far enough, you'll dilate through the stitch and tear your cervix.
Really?
So they need to get that stitch out before that happens.
So you were awake for your cesarean, though?
I was awake for my cesarean, yeah.
How was the experience of the cesarean birth for you?
The actual experience of the cesarean birth was fairly easy. It's quick, you know. It was like
another epidural spinal.
Yeah,
whatever.
Another epidural spinal, except this time they're like cutting into 7 layers of flesh and
but you don't
whatever.
Feel it.
But you don't feel it, no. So that part, the actual like birthing of her, was not bad, but it was the after why I sought you out for the third. Because my recovery was really, really hard compared to my vaginal birth. With my vaginal birth, it was like I had her and I was fine, pretty much. With the cesarean birth, it was so painful. And having a toddler at home and a new baby to take care of, it wasn't good.
Painful at the incision?
I don't know. I guess at the incision. Painful all around. What happened was when I was having her, I started throwing up in the delivery room. Kind of like when they were already halfway done stitching me. So like the last half of stitching, I was in that situation.
Oh, wow.
And then that continued for the entire day. So imagine, you know, you're getting all these layers cut in, your abs and everything, and then having to use those muscles again to throw up all day. It's just, it makes for a really tough delivery. And I got sick. It was December she was born. So like having a cough and all those things, like, just don't make recovery for C-section that pleasant.
You said imagine, as if it was happening to me. And first, the hardest thing was to imagine was that I had abs. But then, then I couldn't imagine anybody cutting through them.
Yeah.
Wow. And then throwing up, do you know what that was? I mean, because you said you were throwing up during your first birth, which is vaginal also. Do you think that was self-hormonal, or reaction to the drugs, or?
I think this time it was probably a reaction to the drugs, because when the first time, I think it was a function of like how much pain I was in with the labor, because as soon as I got the epidural, that
went away.
Stopped.
Oh.
But with the C-section, I think it was something in the anesthesia that didn't sit well with
me. A reaction. Were you able to bring her home right away?
We were, yeah. So that was like
different.
A whole other experience.
Whole new
which world. Whole new world.
Oh, we should sing together.
I know, right? I'm sure all the listeners would really, really appreciate that.
Yeah. I think I have like, they give me a 3-bar maximum and then they shut it off. They're like, yeah.
Right. I have a paralyzed vocal cord, so it's definitely not a good singer.
And you sing better than me, so there's that.
Definitely not.
All right, let's take a break because you have a third baby.
Yeah.
And boy, do we have some talking to do.
We
don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
All right.
Welcome back to the Informed Pregnancy and Parenting Podcast. We're talking about Lillian Cohen-Zaad. And here's the thing. So you had a premature vaginal birth with your first baby, and then some NICU time, then a couple of miscarriages, then just a hair premature C-section for breech with your second baby, but you did not like that recovery. And then you got pregnant again.
Yes.
And were you trying again, or was it just hey, the stitch is out, let's go?
No, we were. We were trying again.
And
and we have 2 little girls, and then this time we found out it was a little boy, so we were really excited about just having both and all the fun things.
Were you nervous again about the early pregnancy?
Yes, definitely. Both my husband and I, like, almost don't even talk about the pregnancy until we are past probably that first trimester.
Mm-hmm. 13 weeks.
Yeah.
And how was the pregnancy for you, third one? Now you're juggling 2 little ones.
Now juggling 2 little ones, yeah. The first part of it was okay. It was pretty good. At 26 weeks, I started feeling weird again.
Did you get a stitch again?
I did get the stitch again.
So would you call it pelvic rest again?
Yes.
No baths?
Wonderful.
Are you a bath person?
I love baths. So love.
We took away a lot of things that give you pleasure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, when I first got pregnant with my first daughter, I didn't talk about this, but I was scared to, like, have a baby because, you know, you're this person for all of your life, and then all of a sudden you're going to become this mother, right? Mm-hmm. So I was a little bit depressed during my first pregnancy. And I think by round 3, it's like, okay, now I am a mother. Like, I wasn't a mother before, you know? The moment my daughter was born, a different version of me was born, and it was that
100%. You see the birth, 2 births at once,
yes.
The birth of the baby and the birth of the mother.
Except for just like a baby has to go through all of their growing, I think a mother also has to go through so much growing, and every day we're growing. But those first years as a mother for me were a little tough. Like, I was this career girl, and, like, you know, I was 33 when I got married. And so, but by now, my third pregnancy, it was like I was finally in a place where I was, like, enjoying being pregnant and really, like, coming into my own as a mom.
That's
if that
cool.
makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. You're born as, like, a new mother, so
yeah,
infant mother, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then by the third one, you're like,
by the third
a
one,
mature mother.
I'm like, this is me, man. I'm a mom now, you know?
And you grew into it, you like it.
Yeah, I love it. It, which is so funny because I don't really like kids that much, like other people's kids. But I love my kids,
oh,
you know?
Well, that's great. It's
yeah.
better than the other way around.
Right, exactly.
You only
True.
Liked other people's kids.
But I didn't know. Like, I was one of those moms that was like, what if she's born and I'm just, like, not into her? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it never happens, I'm sure.
Thankfully.
But, yeah. But the second she was born. I was
so 26 weeks, you start feeling the funky stuff again.
Yes.
You have a stitch.
Got that at 18 weeks planned this time, not, like, emergent.
Mm-hmm.
And 26 weeks, feel the funky stuff. My husband's like, let's go to the hospital. Here we go again. By this time, we knew that I had what's called an incompetent cervix.
Okay. That's an excellent term.
Yes.
Incompetent cervix.
I had never heard of this before, but yeah.
Well, I've talked about it before because I just, I think it's unusual how many of the terms that we have for women's stuff are not the most flattering.
Right, like so. Incompetent and...
yeah, well, I mean, your cervix is... incompetent cervix essentially means your cervix is opening up earlier than it should,
mm-hmm.
right? So
mm-hmm.
maybe we can call it, like, a very eager to do its job cervix or
right.
something
ambitious
like that.
Ambitious cervix.
Yeah. Why do we have to call it incompetent?
Right. So, but that's what it's called. And so that stitch was the prevention for the incompetent cervix, as well as the progesterone shots again.
Both of them helping to keep the pregnancy going longer.
Exactly.
So what did you find at 26 weeks?
So we get to the hospital and they're like, yep, you're contracting and your contractions are 1 minute apart. So
not painful?
Not painful.
Okay.
So at that point, you know, we know what comes with, like, a premature baby. And this is very early, 26
weeks. This is
really, really early.
Because
so,
at 28 weeks mm-hmm. is, like, the week of viability, right? If you make it past 28 weeks.
Well, they say 24 weeks is the week of viability, but 28 is, like, your chances just go up so much higher to not have issues and to survive, but to not
of,
have issues
of survival,
afterwards.
Right? There's, like, little doubt of survival after
Correct.
28 weeks. But
Correct.
Before that, it's still iffy
it
for
is.
Even surviving. And,
yeah.
of course, the issues.
Exactly.
So 26 is scary.
So we're terrified. Like, my husband and I look at each other, and we are just, you know, terrified. So they do all the things that they did the first round. They give me the medication, the steroids for the baby's lungs, magnesium, which makes you feel really groggy and hot and just not a good feeling overall. I was in the hospital for 1 week.
Hmm.
They were able to stop the contractions. And at that point, I was put on complete bed rest.
Okay. No parties.
No parties, yeah. And it's tough with two toddlers at home to be, like, on complete bed rest, right?
I'm trying to picture it.
Yeah, it just, it doesn't really happen. So
how do you not even pick them up and things? I mean,
I have, thank goodness, we have, like, such an amazing village around us, which if you have, like, one of these types of pregnancies, it's not your typical pregnancy. Having mom and mother-in-law and, you know, a supportive spouse. Thank God my husband's, like, amazing and just so helpful with everything along the way. So, and we have help. We have a housekeeper that was amazing. You know, it took all hands on deck.
Village.
Yeah.
You had
exactly.
a village.
Exactly. So I was on bed rest from 26 weeks on.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then how did things progress towards the end of the pregnancy?
So before 26 weeks, he wasn't breech. But at the hospital, when I went in, they said, he is breech. So I'm like, great.
So you were planning for a vaginal birth?
I was planning
after
for,
cesarean?
Yes. I wanted a vaginal birth after cesarean. I didn't want to go through that
another
recovery.
Cesarean recovery.
Yes. So when they said he was breech, I'm like, okay, well, let's just get past this hump and we'll figure out the birth. Once I can get past a point where I feel confident that the baby's not going to be, like, in NICU forever, and let's focus on that first, and then I'll see what to do. So once I got to about 33 weeks, I started thinking about maybe this time I should try to flip him. Mm-hmm. And I was still scared to do that because I didn't want him to come early and didn't want anything to make my body go into labor. But that was, I think at 34 weeks was when I reached out to you, or like 33 and a half.
We had a chat.
We had a chat.
You're like, I got this breech baby, but if the wind blows north, my baby will come out. So
exactly.
Good luck.
Exactly.
And we did. We made a calculation because usually the natural things that you do for breech, you can start early on. Mm-hmm. It's not like we're doing anything forceful to the baby. But mm-hmm. by the same token, you're pretty fragile.
Yeah.
You specifically, right. You know, have more going on than the average person. Mm-hmm. So I think we made a calculation on when.
Yeah, I think you said like 35 weeks mm-hmm. or closest to 35 weeks.
And we got to hang out a lot together, but your baby didn't turn.
Baby didn't turn. But I think meeting you happened for a reason, because prior to meeting you, I had no idea that vaginal breech birth was even a thing that you could do. So in one of our sessions, you said, you know, you have small babies. You know he has a small head, because they had told me that in the ultrasound. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're a good candidate for a vaginal breech birth. And I was like, what's that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, if you've already had a vaginal birth, that's mm-hmm. one thing that makes you a better candidate. Obviously, having smaller babies is another thing. But also, like, your thing is, like, one of the concerns about delivering a breech baby vaginally is, will the baby come out
right.
or not? And your thing is, like, can we keep the baby in?
Right.
You're, like, the opposite of the typical
exactly.
person. So did you have conversations with your doctor about manually turning the baby?
So I had my sessions with you, and I was hoping to kind of create some space for the baby to turn there. And then I had an ECV scheduled at 37 in a few days.
But you had never previously made it to 37.
I had never previously
made
it.
Okay. And they wouldn't do it earlier because protocol is that you don't really do it till 37.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
So, dun, dun, dun.
I love, this is the only episode we have with sound effects.
At 37 weeks exactly.
Wow, the most pregnant you had ever been.
The most pregnant I had ever been. Very exciting. I had just eaten a tuna salad.
Ooh, tuna.
I know. And with my puking, that was just not a good choice.
No. Peppermint candy.
But I had no idea. And I lay down on the bed, actually next to my husband. It was about 5 p.m. in the afternoon. And I said, babe, something feels different today. Like, I think my body's getting ready to have the baby. And he's like now? You know? And I was like, no, not now. But I think maybe like in the next week it'll happen. And literally like a second later, I felt kind of like a pop and an immediate really bad contraction.
Ooh.
And so I looked at him and I was like, I'm having a really bad contraction. We have to get in the car right now. And I went to the bathroom. And sure enough, my water had broken.
Oh, wow.
So, of course, we don't have anyone to watch the kids. It's like Sunday afternoon.
Oh, my.
And so I'm like, I'll Uber to the hospital. You meet me there. Because, like, my baby's come so fast that I just needed to get there. But miraculously, we found someone that was, like, 5 minutes away.
To watch your kids?
To watch the kids. She came over. And we both took an Uber, which I don't even understand.
Together?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why. We're 10 blocks from the hospital.
So not deal with parking? I don't know.
No, I think we just weren't thinking straight. And so this poor Uber driver, like, my water is breaking all over his backseat. And my husband's like, come on, you know, she's in labor. And I'm like, from the contraction. And we get pulled over.
What?
Yes.
Like, for what? Was he speeding?
Yeah, he was speeding.
Oh.
So I'm talking to my MFM on the cell phone. I see that there's a cop behind us. I'm like yelling out the window like, I'm in labor. And anyway, the cop's like, okay, I'll follow you to the hospital, which he
follow
did.
You to the hospital?
Yeah, I'm like, can you clear the way?
Like go in front, yeah.
Yeah, but he followed us. We were almost there. He followed us, and then we got out, and we were just like, I'm so sorry to the Uber driver.
He got a ticket?
I don't know. We were like, please don't give him a ticket. And my husband was like, text me. I'll take care of it. You know, I'm so sorry if he does. But, like, I was like, I got to go. Like, I got to go into the
hospital.
Come on.
They got to understand.
I mean,
maybe the speeding ticket was for your baby.
I mean, clearly I was a woman that was in very...
needing to get to the hospital quickly.
And this happened at, like, 5. By now it's, like, 5:20. So not a lot of time has passed, but I am... definitely, my contractions are one on top of the other again.
Painful?
Very painful.
Oh, so different.
Very, very painful. They get me onto the bed, and I'm like, I have to go to the bathroom. And they're like, no, no, no.
Poop go to the bathroom?
Yeah.
Okay.
They're like, no, 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 you know, because I have this reclusion, and they want to get that out before I can get this baby out.
And you're breech.
And I'm breech. So they're waiting for my doctor to come to the hospital, and they're going to try to prep me for C-section and take me into the OR.
Which is what I imagine you would expect, because
yes,
you haven't had a chance to try to turn the baby out.
Yes, exactly. So I am just in a ton of pain at this point. I'm really wishing that I had done some sort of labor preparation, because I was just very out of control, like flailing and like screaming and throwing up and like
it's your
just
thing.
Yeah, it's my thing. It's really cool. If you're going to have a thing, I recommend not
being
choosing
vomit.
That
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
There's so many things to pick from.
I was crying like, oh, my baby's going to just smell tuna salad on me. He's not going to like it. the nurses were amazing. Oh. Nurses are just like God sent from heaven. But
that's great.
Yeah. So they take me into the OR. My doctor gets there. She comes over and like pats me on the head while I'm like wiping my face and like just trying not to die. And she's like, Lillian, you're at 9.5 centimeters.
Oh, wow.
I can see his butt. Do you want to try to do this vaginally? And I said, yes, absolutely. I mean, I didn't even know that that was a thing until I talked to you in the office, but I was like, yes, 100%. So she said, okay. She said, the biggest concern is head entrapment, but we know his measurements and we can do this. She was very confident, and it made me confident.
Had you guys ever talked about doing it before?
No way.
She just brought it up. She didn't even know that you had, like, a thought about it.
Not even a little bit, no.
That's pretty cool.
My ECV was, like, a few days later scheduled, yeah. So she was phenomenal in that sense. And so I was already in the operating room. Still hadn't gotten my, like, glorious epidural. That was my number one thing on my birth plan. But finally got it at the 9.5 centimeter mark. Just in time
That's
to push
your time.
Again.
That's
yeah.
your thing.
So this time the pushing took an hour.
Wow. I wonder why. Do you think because it was breech?
I think probably because I was a psycho and was yelling at the anesthesiologist that I wasn't completely numb on one side. I was like, please keep numbing me.
This is not the almost made out with the Indian woman.
No. Different woman.
Different. Oh.
Not as, you know, with it, but she probably gave me a little bit more. Also because, you know, they weren't sure exactly what dose to give me because I was like C-section and then all of a sudden, a second later,
right,
not
it's
C-section.
Different. Yeah.
So I was pretty numb. Plus it's a butt coming out instead of a head. I think it's just like smushier and it kept going back in. They asked me if I wanted a mirror and I said no.
You didn't want to see it?
No, I'm not like, you know, naturally, I don't know, I was freaked out. But at the end of it, I was like, I need to see what's going on because I need to be able to push this little
Focus.
Guy out.
Yeah.
So I did. I took the sheet off. I didn't even need a mirror because my legs
you
were like.
See. You could
yeah,
look down and see.
I could just see everything. And he
Was
came.
It cool to see?
It was so cool. Like, if I could go back, I would have full-blown video and mirror of all my kids' births. But I didn't know how cool that was going to be to see.
Did you take pictures in video, or there was nothing?
We didn't take video. We took some pictures, but not of, like, him actually coming out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
So does that mean you have to have a fourth?
Probably. Hmm. Yeah. Who knows how that birth will be.
For the film credit. No, you know what? Nobody could even begin to predict.
No one could even begin to predict.
I mean, you're just a warrior for even, like, Thank going you. Into it again and again.
You know what's interesting is I didn't even know that that was, like, such a weird thing, this vaginal breech birth. But I look around the OR. There's, like, 30 people in the OR. I'm like, what are all these people doing here?
They wanted to see.
They wanted to see. And then my nurse was like, this is my only one I've ever seen in 7 years of me being a labor and delivery nurse.
Wow.
So,
well, it doesn't happen every day, and that's an understatement. It's just becoming more and more rare. And the problem really is that sometimes you have a person who's an excellent candidate for it.
Mm-hmm.
Not always. Sometimes you're not.
Mm-hmm.
But as fewer and fewer practitioners have the confidence and skill to do it, the option will disappear, even though you might be a better candidate for it.
Yes. And I think, you know, sadly, the only reason why I was able to have that birth is because my doctor is a high-risk doctor. Like, she wasn't just an OB. She's an MFM. I asked for her specifically this time to do my C-section because I wanted this hospital. And she was just confident and cool about it. And I asked her later, like, what's up? You do these breech births all the time, you know? And she's like, no, but when I was a resident, I would really seek them out. I've just always been really interested in it. So thankfully, I became a good candidate for her.
Being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
I mean, by my calculations, your next baby should make it to 38 weeks anyway.
Right. It's progressively getting better.
Yeah, I wonder if the breech happens. We don't know. But I wonder if the breech happens also because the geometry of your uterus is a little different than textbook. And it seems to be geometry that kind of guides them into the orientation that they get into. So you are very cool. And,
thank you.
It's nice to share your story. It's so unique and interesting. I mean, I don't know anybody who's had, I know one person who's had vaginal birth, then C-section, then vaginal birth after C-section, but it wasn't a breech baby. So you definitely have some kind of record going here.
Yeah. It's been definitely an interesting ride.
Yeah, and we recorded our first couple of bars of music together. So.
Exactly, we're on a roll.
What a night!
Oh, what a night!
Here we go again. And speaking of nights, you spend many nights working on a book.
I do.
And what's your book going to be about?
It's a memoir, and it's our love story. My husband and I wanted to write it out for my daughters. I think it's a very unique and interesting story.
This is before all of this
unique
and interesting pregnancy and birth story.
I mentioned that I didn't get married until I was 33, and I met my husband at 24.
Oh.
But we had a really interesting story in between those years. And also, I converted to Judaism during that time. So I want my kids to know and understand why we made the choices that we made. And it's a cool story that I want to document for
Well, you got my curiosity.
Yeah.
On all of that. I didn't know you converted in. Welcome to the tribe.
I did. Thank you. Thank you. I love it.
Well, we're happy to have you.
Thank you.
We need cool people.
Yeah.
Where can we find you online?
Instagram is probably the easiest, and it's at Lil Cohenzad. It's LILLCOHANZAD.
It almost sounds like a rapper name.
Yeah.
Lil
Cohenzad.
Exactly.
Amazing.
Well, I'm going to be looking around for your book. I know
Thank
it's going
you.
To take a minute, but I'm very curious.
Thank you.
You're a great storyteller.
Thanks so much.
At home, thanks for listening. If you would like more of our latest media about pregnancy, postpartum, and parenting, check us out on Instagram at Dr. Berlin. It's at DocTorBerlin.
I got a whole lot of questions for you. This kid's gonna test my will. I got a lot to learn and my baby's due.
This episode is sponsored by an innovative product that's made a big difference for parents and babies alike. Dr. Mom Butt Balm. As a parent of four, I've had my fair share of battles with diaper rash, often resorting to thick, unpleasant pastes. I only recently discovered Dr. Mom Butt Balm, and I was immediately impressed by its pleasant consistency and ease of application. This pediatric-approved skin protectant is free from dyes, preservatives, and zinc oxide, making it perfect for your baby's sensitive skin. It's designed by a doctor who's also a mom, ensuring your little one gets the gentlest care. A small dab is all it takes to soothe and protect, avoiding the mess and hassle of traditional treatments. With ingredients like dimethicone and petrolatum, Dr. Mom Butt Balm not only soothes, but also restores your baby's delicate skin. Available on Amazon.com and Walmart.com, it's the smart choice for every parent wanting to keep diaper rash at bay. Remember, with Dr. Mom Butt Balm, nothing comes between you and your baby, not even diaper rash.